Welcome to Webinar 8. This is Françoise Mathieu, and today's topic is self-care at work. I think that we can all agree that working in education is a very hectic environment and that a lot of self-care strategies that you may have heard being recommended for, you know, office workers do not apply to you in any way. I often find that people who don't work in education don't actually realize that some of you never get a break and that you might be on your feet from dawn to dusk and have to find ways to just do basic stuff like go to the bathroom and have a snack and have some lunch. And so it's not dissimilar to what I find in healthcare, where a lot of nurses will say to me that they're on the go. I mean, their shifts are often 12-hour shifts, and they do get some type of breaks. But in the middle of, you know, if you're working in intensive care or an emergency ward, there are times where you are just on the go all the time. So working as a crisis worker for years, I definitely found that some of the recommendations that have been made for self-care at work, you know, kind of more generic recommendations. If you go sometimes, you know, there's some really good websites. Great West Life has some wonderful resources in their mental health in the workplace website. But I found that a lot of those were much more kind of geared towards, you know, kind of white-collar office staff and not necessarily to folks who are on the ground. So what I wanted to talk about in the next two webinars is different ways that we can kind of implement some self-care strategies, understanding that we work in really chaotic environments and that there's a lot of uncertainty and that we're often called upon to kind of, you know, drop everything we're doing to go and take care of business. So that's kind of the context in which I'm going to talk about this. So if you go back to the balance map that I've been discussing over this series of webinars, the piece I wanted to talk about today is as it pertains to reactions or reactions to change. So I want to invite you to think about just a quick reflection. First of all, how do you deal with change and uncertainty? And how has your workplace changed? If you've been working in the school system for a long time, how has the landscape of your work changed in the past 5, 10, you know, 15, 20 years? And as I know from your survey, there are some of you who've been around for quite a while, and you commented, and I've heard the same thing from other folks in education, that things have really, really changed in the last decade. More complex cases, sometimes a larger volume of work, larger classrooms, more kids with more complex mental health issues. So just thinking about, you know, and not just thinking about kind of a negative, because I think we can easily make a list of all the things that are, you know, harder and more difficult, but what are some of the things that you have more of in your schools now? And maybe you'll say we have more complex cases. We have more students. What are things we have less of? And again, you can flip that around. You can think, yeah, we have less resources or we have less whatever. But is there a way you can think of it also in the positive? What are things that you have more of in a positive way? And what are things you have less of in a positive way? What are some things that are working better than they used to? And what are some things that are not working as well as they used to? And one of the things I found interesting walking into workplaces where some people have what we call it institutional memory. So they have, you know, they've been there for a long time and they remember how things used to be done. And sometimes those things are have become improvements. So an example would be technology. You know, sometimes technology has changed the way we do the work, and that's not always a negative thing. I certainly know that doing the work that I do now, 10, 15 years ago was a lot more difficult because I just couldn't quickly have, you know, I couldn't prepare a PowerPoint in 2 minutes and then book my flights in 2 minutes and go do a train. You know, all of those things took a lot more time. So just kind of thinking in both regards of things that work better, not so well, how has change affected you, and how much change you've seen. We know because there's some research being done on the level and speed of change that we're all experiencing. And, you know, there was a study that was done that said that we now experience more change in a lifetime than, you know, all hundreds of years of centuries in the past where things used to be pretty static. But now things move fast and they shift. And what you've probably also seen because of the new technology is that it's also had some impact in terms of our attention span and the kids that we work with, their ability to focus on things. And there's a whole bunch of researchers looking now at the impact of smartphones and are they affecting our short term and our attention span. And that's a whole other conversation, and there's some really good resources on that as well. So that's kind of focus on the reality of working in the education system in Ontario at this time. I like to put this picture of a roller coaster because I think that the kind of the nature of the beast now is a lot of change and uncertainty. And, you know, as I mentioned to you a couple of webinars ago, we've had some school closures here, and so there's a lot of folks that are not really sure what's going to happen next. If you don't have seniority, are you going to still have a job? And we need to recognize that even when we are highly professional, dedicated staff members, obviously those things have an impact on us in terms of our stress level and our ability to concentrate if we have some uncertainty about those pieces. The other thing that's complicated and also interesting is that as policies and regulations and, you know, politics and, I mean, things change that we don't have control over, some of those things also may have an impact on our job. Eligibility criteria, you know, what kids are eligible for certain types of additional supports. Some of those things have changed in the province over the last few years. So I want to invite you to think about, how do you personally cope with change and uncertainty? And I want to invite you to look at the various folks that you work with, your colleagues, or maybe even in your family, your loved ones. Would you agree that not everyone in that group deals with change and uncertainty in the same way? I certainly find that, you know, in terms of my friend group, if I was going, I could give you an example. I went on a little camping trip with two friends of mine recently, and we have all three of us very different personalities. And I found that one of them, man, she's, you know, sweating the small stuff. I just thought, well, this is no big deal. We're just going to problem solve. And I just found her to be, you know, really, I don't know, kind of delicate. I was like, this is no big deal. Or I remember one day the weather wasn't great, and it's like it ruined her day. And I was like, well, I don't know. I'm kind of a glass half full kind of person, which she later, by the way, said she found extremely irritating, which is hilarious. She said, your constant positivity and optimism gets on my nerves. She's my best friend in the whole world, so we had a good laugh about that. So I want to invite you to think about, first of all, what are three words that come to you? When I say the word change, what are three words that come to you? And are they positive or negative? So sometimes when I do this in workshops, people say change, energy, new, fresh, and other people say, you know, scary, anxious. And, you know, what are some examples of changes you've experienced in your life? As we know, when we discussed briefly kind of the stress, you know, patterns, that not all positive changes are necessarily without stress. One of the things that's been considered to be one of the highest stress, other than obviously tragic events, but one of the things that's been considered to be one of the most stressful things in someone's life are transitions such as retirement. Now, some of you are saying, no way, I can't wait to retire, yoo-hoo. But in fact, we see a lot of health issues when people transition, including retirement, because it's a massive change to what we know, and our day-to-day schedule is changed. We know that transitioning when your children go away to go to college or job or university, those are very big transitions in someone's life. So I just want to invite you to think about three changes you experienced in your life, not necessarily the most difficult ones. I'm not inviting you to go into the hardest things you've ever experienced, because I think we all have those, but what are some changes you've experienced in your life, and what were those like for you, and did you adjust pretty well or not so well? I know that when our first baby came into our life, and it turns out, of course, she had very severe ADHD, but we didn't know that in those days, she never slept. And so that change was extremely stressful to us. And then she was born during the great ice storm of 1998, which some of you remember, and some of you, that makes me sound like I'm 1,000 years old, and that's okay. But, you know, I had a two-week-old baby during the ice storm, and we lost power for 3 weeks. And so those were very stressful changes, but they were also kind of exciting. So the other thing that I want to invite you to think about is, how does your way of coping with change and uncertainty impact others that you work with? So I'm going to give you a quick little activity. So let's pretend for a second that it's Friday night, and you've got the night off, and you have big plans. You're very excited, you know, big plans with your pajamas and your favorite snack and your favorite show or game or whatever. You are, you know, taking the night off. And all of a sudden you get a phone call, and it's your best friend, or a text. It's your best friend, and your best friend says, I have tickets to the show, the game, the thing you've always wanted. It's tonight. You need childcare. It's handled. Like, this is, we are on. And so what I do often with this activity is I'll get people to kind of, you know, do a show of hands of how many of you, when you heard that, you were like, woohoo, let's go, in 5 minutes I'm getting change and off we go. How many of you are like, absolutely not. I'm well established here in my pajamas, like I'm good. And what we started finding out is that when we work in high-stress work environments such as the field of education or healthcare, a majority of the audience, when we survey them, say, I am not going out. And when I do the same survey with a group of people who, you know, I don't know, a bunch of accountants or people who work in an office, they're like, most of them say, yeah, absolutely, I would go. So I call this kind of the porcupine effect, where when we work in highly stressful work environments where there's also an element of difficult secondary or even primary trauma, we are often very reactive. And that's why I call it the porcupine. So I know personally that if you give me an unexpected event, even though it's fun, like literally, even if it's a barbecue on Friday night, my first reaction is to get my hackles up. I'm like, porcupine. And my first thought is, absolutely not. That was not the plan. That was not the plan. And what I realized, though, is that over time, if you give me 40 minutes, I'm totally going out. Like, it just, I need a little bit of time to process what's happening. And I personally think, and I mean, you can do that for your own analysis, but I personally think that it's related to, I had some very unexpected things happen that were, you know, nothing worse than anyone else, but, you know, when my parents got divorced and I was 9, I did not see that coming. It was the biggest, quite frankly, pretty traumatic event in my life. We lost everything and we had to start again, and I didn't see it coming. And so I think that I've kind of developed this sense of change is bad. News is unexpected news is bad. If a friend of mine says to me, we need to talk, I will not wait till that night to talk because I think, you know, there's bad news or I'm in trouble. So I've learned that about myself. And now what I can do is let people know that I tend to have that reaction. And it can lead to, you know, clarifying some things and having less misunderstandings where people may kind of not understand my reaction. So I invite you to think about that for yourself. Like, let me give you another test here, a little test. Have you ever spilt milk all inside your fridge, like from the top all the way into the crisper? Or has someone else in your family ever spilt milk or even chocolate milk? You with me? Okay, so is it true that sometimes when that happens, you go bananas? I certainly would. There are times where I would just be like, lose my marbles. And other times, I'm pretty zen about it. I'll be like, well, that sucks. I was going to clean the fridge anyways. Off we go. Paper towel, you know, spray, blah, blah, blah. Same question. Have you ever been stuck in traffic? So this is a picture of Los Angeles, actually, where I do some work. And as some of you probably know, it's a bit like Toronto. The traffic is unbelievable. 9 lanes of highway. Sometimes you don't go anywhere. And so what people in Los Angeles have developed is kind of this pretty zen attitude about it, because what are you going to do? And so they give themselves, you know, they call it daytime traffic versus Sunday traffic, or Friday light. Friday morning, apparently, traffic's lighter. And they just deal. And sometimes it can take an hour and a half to get somewhere, and sometimes the same distance can take 15 minutes. So when you're stuck in traffic, how are you? Is it true that sometimes you are super stressed, you have road rage, you're freaking out, and other times you're like, oh, well, here's a chance to listen to my favorite tunes? So what I'm describing here has been referred to as the window of tolerance framework. There's a good acronym if you want to remember it. It's called WTF. And this is my colleague Diana that's been working on this and using some research from Pat Ogden and others. And what we've realized, and once you get this, you're like, this makes so much sense. There, we all have an optimal zone. And we all know what that looks like. You know, I referred to a few webinars ago about being in the sweet spot, in the zone. We all know that there's a, when we're well, and things are going well, you know, we spill the milk, we get stuck in traffic, but we're pretty zen about it. And what we've discovered, I'll show you this picture. So it's kind of the window of tolerance is the place where we are able to carry on with day-to-day life and feeling, you know, we have ups and downs, of course. I'm not saying that we are just blissed out the whole day, but we're going to be able to kind of go and stay within a pretty healthy zone. What happens is, two things happen. When we bump out into what we call hyperarousal mode, which is the top here, or low arousal, which we also call hypoarousal, what starts happening in those situations is hyperarousal is when you really feel overwhelmed. So you spill the milk and you just lose it. Or the opposite, you spill the milk and you just sit on the floor of your kitchen and you shut down. So what's interesting about that, first of all, is recognizing what is your window of tolerance and how wide or narrow is it. So what I found, for example, with some members of my family is that the folks in my family who have ADHD have a smaller window of tolerance than I do. So for example, for them, I'm not going to be able to draw a straight line here, but just to give you an idea. So for them, the window, their ability to deal with stuff is just it's a narrower window. And so being asked, for example, to wait on hold on the phone drives the member of my family crazy. They're just like, I can't do this. Whereas I tend to be like, well, I can be on hold on the phone and work on my emails at the same time and put the phone on speakerphone. Ain't no thing. And so the thing about that becomes really interesting is, first of all, understanding what is your window of tolerance. And secondly, is it possible that when you are stressed and overloaded, that window is actually narrower than when, for example, you've just come back from a nice restorative vacation? The third thing to think about is, just to piggyback on the webinar I did earlier about the adverse childhood experiences, what we found is a lot of folks who have had a lot of adverse childhood experiences tend to have a narrower window and will often go either to hypoarousal quite quickly. So remember the example I gave last time about my person who had a lot of personal debt, and when the creditors called, she didn't even answer. She shut down. The other example that I've seen a lot with my soldiers, for example, who come back from the war zones and have probably some elements of PTSD or post-traumatic stress disorder, is that they tend to get overwhelmed and overreact to things really quickly. And so this becomes a really interesting framework, not only to understand ourselves, but also to understand the challenging colleagues that you work with and some of the parents that you work with, or even some of the kids, that if they have a really narrow window of tolerance, some things that may seem like no big deal to you may absolutely send them into a tailspin because they have a much narrower window. I like this cartoon. It says, I'm learning how to relax, doctor, but I want to relax better and faster. I want to be on the cutting edge of relaxation. So the truth is, and this is coming back to Cheryl Richardson, who I mentioned a few webinars ago, who wrote the book, Take Time for Your Life. Cheryl has a really nice questionnaire in her book that's called, What's Fueling You? Are you running on premium or junk fuel? And so without needing to know a whole bunch about hormones in the brain, we know that adrenaline is the hormone that's produced by your adrenal glands, which are the little glands that sit on top of your kidneys. And when you're producing a lot of adrenaline, of course, it increases your heart rate and constricts your blood vessels and air passages, because obviously there are situations where, you know, when you're in danger, you need to be able to, you know, basically run. You need to be able to get away from things. And so there are times where having a lot of extra adrenaline is helpful because it might save you. But what starts happening is when we are chronically stressed, a lot of us are flooding our body with all of these stress hormones. Now, there's some of that you can't control because you can't control necessarily your work environment. But there are some things that you can do to try and at least reduce the amount of stress hormones that are being produced. And one of them, and I'm sorry to say this because I love coffee, but one of them is reducing your caffeine intake. Now, I don't know if you're a coffee drinker, but I have definitely found that I can have one really great cup of coffee, and I love coffee, but if I have two or three, I end up feeling jittery and my heart races and I'm more reactive, and it turns out, of course, that's exactly what's happening. And there's other things we're going to talk about in terms of dealing with that. So one of them is about noticing what's happening for you. And I call it, it's kind of going back to the porcupine, I call it beware of being in crisis reactivity mode. And I want to give you an example that's, you know, it's a pretty heavy example, but I'm not going to talk about details. But I want to give you an example of the Sandy Hook situation. So many of you will remember some years ago there was a terrible shooting at Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown, Connecticut. And I went, about 10 months later, I was invited to do a training for the school personnel and the crisis response team that had done the very difficult work following that, doing notifications and supporting parents of the children. You know, it's just really, really difficult stuff, as you can imagine. What was really interesting, though, is when I went 10 months later, I found that most of the staff, understandably, were still incredibly affected by what had happened, and a lot of them were really not doing very well. I also got to sit in and listen to a blue ribbon panel. What that means is that these are people who are, you know, the top leaders of the field, and they were basically looking at lessons learned. And in fact, the talk was called Lessons Learned from Sandy Hook. And one of the things that they said is they realized that they were all in reactivity mode. So I don't know if you know the state of Connecticut. It has New Haven, and that's a big inner city with a lot of, you know, really complex gang issues. And then it also has a lot of rural areas in the countryside. But Connecticut has some really complex challenges even before Sandy Hook happened. And so what the Blue Ribbon panel concluded is that they were so reactive to this unimaginable tragic event that they basically sent all 26 of their best people into the, you know, eye of the storm, if you will. So this happened. They were like, oh, my gosh, what do we do? And they said, let's take our 26 best people in the state. And in one day, basically, you know, burnt out and traumatized every single person, you know, the top of the team. And they realized after that it's almost like they were so shaken and traumatized by what happened that he said it's like we forgot that Connecticut had and will continue to have very complex needs before and after Sandy Hook. And it's like we lost all of our ability to judge that, and we were just into action mode. And in a way, we ended up, you know, causing harm, even though, of course, they did a really good job. But I think it's a really interesting and important reflection about, as we navigate these complex environments, such as your schools, what is it that we do to take care of ourselves so that we don't get sucked into the frenetic activity of your of our colleagues? And I remember talking to someone who works in a women's shelter recently, and I think she's a director. And so she gets there in the morning, and her staff are running around like everyone's frantic. And she says, "What's going on?" And one of them says to her, "We are out of milk," you know. And she's like, "That's it." And it was almost like they, you know, if you go back to the window of tolerance, that they were so, oops, that's a not very good drawing, that they were so stressed by their day-to-day job that, first of all, I think their window of tolerance was pretty low. And the minute they ran out of milk, they kind of went into panic mode, when, in fact, that was actually not a hard thing to problem solve. And so I think that we need to also understand, if you're noticing yourself or some of your colleagues go into reactivity mode, that sometimes it's because, you know, our cup is empty, our battery is low, and we tend to either get highly reactive to something or and kind of indiscriminately, that it's not, it's like everything becomes universally urgent, or we tend to shut down. And so I just want to invite you to think about, and this is the reflection activity, what are your experiences with the window of tolerance framework? So think about that. You know, maybe looking back to the last week or the weekend you just had, can you think of situations recently when either you were hyper aroused, so you went way up, or you were shut down, you were hypo aroused? Can you think of situations like that? And how did that affect the situation? And also, why was that? So I'll give you a very simple example. I'm sure you can come up with some of your in your own life. Because I travel a lot for work, so almost every week, so for example, tomorrow I'm going to Northern Ontario to work with some of the mental health workers up there, Kenora, Sioux Lookout, Dryden. So I do that, you know, almost every week. Sometimes I was just in Lethbridge, Alberta, working with the school board. And, you know, as you can imagine, that travel gets old real fast. Like, it's not that fancy at some point. You're, like, schlepping your bag and dealing with canceled flights, you know. And anyways, so there are times where I'm pretty zen about it, and I'm patient, and I learn to wait in line at the security gate. And so when my window of tolerance is pretty wide and I'm not exhausted, I'm good. And I'll walk around, and I might even, you know, think, oh, look at that cute little couple in front of me. You know, they look like they're 110 years old. Look how slowly they're moving. But when I'm exhausted and depleted, I have no tolerance. And so my window of tolerance is much narrower. And I might literally, I jokingly call it air rage, but there might be situations where I'm lining up at security, my planes, I'm going to miss my flight, I'm boiling hot, which, by the way, not everyone else is. I think it's just, you know, my stress hormones are revving up. And all of a sudden, the cute little old couple in front of me isn't cute anymore. They are filling me with frustration and rage. So I just want to invite you to think about that. What are examples for you? Well, you've noticed this. And what are examples you've noticed at home and at work? And how did your reaction affect the situation? So a couple of weeks ago, I had this going on, so I wasn't feeling very well. I had just received a really upsetting email from someone who was mad at me about something that I probably deserved. And it was on my mind, and my daughter was sick, and she came to me. She was very upset, and she was like, I need to go to the clinic. And I was so grouchy, like I took her there, but I was just like, oh, you know. And I remember in the moment she said to me, come, like she got really upset, and she was like surprised that I was being so irritable. And I finally realized it had nothing to do with needing to take her to the clinic. I just had so much else going on that I kind of went into hyper arousal mode because of that. So I think that self-awareness is the key here, being able to monitor it and kind of moderate what's going on. So I'm going to conclude by inviting you, your second reflection activity is to think about what are some of your real strengths in terms of reacting to change. So if we were working together, you know, what would you say? So for example, some people say, you know what? I'm a good problem solver. I have a friend like that. He's very creative. I can't often problem solve as well, you know, if I'm kind of overwhelmed and stressed. And he always thinks outside the box. So is that one of your strengths? Or maybe you have a really good attitude to uncertainty. So I just really want to invite you to think about what are your three top strengths of your ways of reacting to change? And also, if we were colleagues, what would be the best way to approach you if we work together? So an example I often give, going back to the porcupine, is I might say, if we work together, I might say to you, listen, when I'm in hyper-arousal mode and I'm having a little porcupine moment, don't take it personally. I don't feel like chatting. I might just go straight, you know, straight into the school. I'm going to keep my head down. I'm not going to, you know, go out for break or lunch or talk or chit-chat. Like, I'm going to have no patience for the chit-chat, but it's not personal. And so when people see me doing that, they're not going to necessarily personalize it and it's her problem. I want everyone to know that that's how I cope. Someone else, it might be the opposite. They say, you know, when I'm overwhelmed, I need distraction, I need a muffin, I need a hug. Just having those conversations with one another can be really productive and also prevent some, you know, miscommunication and some conflict that sometimes happen in the workplace. So that's it. Any questions? I'm going to put some resources again on the website, and I hope that you enjoyed this webinar. I'll see you next time.